My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Welcome to a new episode of the show. It is Friday, if you're listening to it on release day, and this is the 64th episode of the show. So I decided to call up and ensure that we've got somebody special for the 64th episode, and that person is Goo from Flashback 64. Their Nintendo 64 podcast is fantastic. I've been a guest on their show. He's been on this show multiple times, and we just figured we'd make him the special 64th episode guest. You can find that after the break. We talk about some unlockable and extra content, which is a cool conversation we don't always get to have a lot of on the show. So I'm glad we picked a fun, less answered question for the show. Business as usual, I've got the newest issue of Retro Game Zine, the Blue Stinger issue. That's now live on pixelsandpolygons.net. Or not live, I mean just available for sale on pixelsandpolygons.net. You can also buy it digitally if you head over to the Patreon shop. patreon.com/DarrenHupke/shop will take you right there. And work continues on in the background on the new 32-bit library. The Greatest Hits volume is in production right now. And by the time you hear this, the Kickstarter for the beat-em-up book will be over. But you should still be able to pick that up in the future if you want to support that and purchase a copy. It will be on Amazon and stuff. I would recommend if you're international, like any Canadians or Europeans or anybody else around the world, like use your local version of Amazon to be able to order one directly to you for cheaper shipping. But if not, you can always order it directly through me at pixelsandpolygons.net, where I've got everything there. And then the next batch of Retro Game Zines is, by the time you listen to this, it should be posted and running on Kickstarter. It'll be a really quick campaign for that, just to kind of produce those next three issues. And I have some really great contributors there. So find the link to all that information in the show notes below. Otherwise, it's kind of... kind of it. So thank you for listening. Thanks for checking out the show. Head over to soundstone.network to check out the other shows on the podcast network. You can listen to shows like Flashback 64 and Kirby Conversations. Big recommendations. So you can see their feeds and read more about their shows there as well. But otherwise, we will be back again next Friday with another new episode and more video game conversations. So enjoy a quick ad and then jump into the episode with Goo right after the break. Bye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. This week, we've got a returning guest and fellow
network cohort now. This is the first time we're recording since all of this, but we've got Gooey from Flashback 64 on the show. Welcome, Goo.
Hey, I can feel the brand synergy. It's off the charts right now.
Yes, yeah, so we are both members of the Soundstone Network, which is a just a group of like-minded podcasts. The details and everything are in the show notes below and everything. You've probably seen us posting about it. There's a lot going on with that, but it's just a group of like-minded podcast folks trying to, you know, do their thing, but, you know, as they do it, help others out along the way. And, you know, we're on the same vibe and same path and everything, so why not work together and all that stuff. So we've been on each other's show like multiple times now too, so it kind of makes sense to just kind of keep working together and finding things to do. So yeah, do you have any other different pitch or way that you present that, Goo? Anything that maybe I left out or skipped?
No, I think you hit upon it right. I think it's like, I would say, yeah, it's just a collection of kind of gaming, sort of retro gaming history shows, but you know, there's a whole depth of like gaming content out there right now that are like people screaming into their camera and clickbaity stuff, and we're trying to just present shows that are thoughtful. And you know,
yeah, I mean, we do, I mean, I have that hot take prompt that, you know, we sometimes talk about, but you know, like to be those types of, we don't like to be those types of shows that are just saying something just to say something outlandish, just to get like the attention and create an argument or anything. You know, we're reflecting and reminiscing and analyzing and like dissecting and just, you know, deconstructing our love for like these classic games. And it can be done in a way that's, you know, presentable and professional and just kind of fun. And so that's kind of what we're doing. So,
yeah.
All right, Goo, what's new with you then? You don't have McKenna by your side. You're rocking solo here. What's new in the Flashback 64 world?
I didn't even think about this, but now that you mention it, we, not only did we, you know, launch this network with, you and Kirby Conversations, but we also just, I guess, this month, yeah, as of this month when we're recording this, we did hit 2 years of being a show, which was pretty cool. And it also coincided with our first episode of our third year. It was our last episode covering 1997 in our game timeline. So it felt like kind of a milestone, and it felt cool that like all this other stuff that we were doing with you and Kirby Conversations, like it all came at that one point. So I was like, okay, cool, like this is the new, we're in a new zone as a podcast, a new era.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you got a new era for sure. Oh, that's cool. Well, yeah, check out Flashback 64, check out Kirby Conversations. The Soundstone Network info is in the show notes below. You can follow us all collectively on Blue Sky at soundstone.network, but also Goo's Flashback 64 page, my information, all stuff, again, all in the show notes below. So take a look at that stuff, check that out, give us a follow, tell your friends, help share and promote if you like what you hear. If you don't like it, yeah, thanks for getting this far at least, and enjoy the rest of your day with whatever you're gonna do. But good, then I got some icebreaker questions, some this or that, if you're ready for them.
Let's do it. Yeah,
okay. So let's say handheld or TV.
Ooh, okay, so up until pretty recently, I was more of like TV was like really the way I preferred. Like, and there was a lot of eras of gaming where I just never played a lot of the handheld titles, even some of my favorite series. And now with, you know, with kind of the Switch, that's kind of blurred the lines with that a lot. And then nowadays, I think maybe just my lifestyle has changed, because a lot of my evenings I'm spent hanging out with McKenna, my co-host, and my wife, and we're watching TV or something. And so it's like, oh yeah, I often am looking for a game that I can play like on my Switch handheld, you know. So I that's kind of my preference right now.
Tub thumping or Candle in the Wind?
Oh, tub thumping by far. I was kind of disappointed that never hit number one on the Billboard charts in the US, but at the same time, in Canada, it did reach number one. And I was like, what the hell? Like, what are we doing here? We're not even English. Canada's more English than us.
I guess they got better taste. Mario or Luigi?
Oh, it's Luigi for me. Luigi has always been my number one. I would always, I'm actually the older sibling, but like whenever I play with my younger brother, Michael, I'd always be like, you're Mario for sure. You gotta be Mario. I'm going to be Luigi. Or if I was playing by myself, I'd have to, kill Mario first, you know, so I could play as Luigi.
Just murder him just to have access. It's, okay.
You got to.
Two more. Let's see. Tomb Raider original or Tomb Raider reboot?
Oh, see, we have that episode coming out. It'll probably be out where we talked about Tomb Raider 2. I have never actually really played the reboot ones. I've only played the first two. McKenna has them all. She's a big fan. They're less my... They look fun, like but I don't even play like a lot of newer sort of games, and some like I don't know, it looks all right though. Looks kind of like,
I mean, this game could be at this point like 15 years old or something.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, how maybe it's that's how like I out of touch I am, I think, you know.
Well, then last one, Mario Tennis or Mario Golf?
Ooh, probably Mario Tennis. For multiplayer, for sure. Like the highs of that outweigh. I think I like Mario Golf as a solitaire experience, you know. But yeah, the multiplayer thrills of Mario Tennis are much better.
Yeah, we for more of that Soundstone brand synergy, I have an upcoming retro game zine issue on the Mario Tennis Game Boy Color copy or version of the game, and Sean from Kirby Conversations is going to be contributing an article to that. So
nice,
more of that brand synergy there with Mario Tennis.
I was just playing that one the other night. I didn't know it had this whole single player mode. I was like
my gosh,
this is crazy. But I couldn't beat one of the trainings. It was like pissing me off.
You get into, like, you start to learn how to like drop shot and lob shot, like by tapping A B or then B A before you hit it. And like there's skill you get to it. And then like, you can also go back out and you can go to a, like an office building, like in that little area. Like if you walk down the road towards the screen, mm-hmm. and there's some like computer simulation things you can play against. There's like different, like four different levels of difficulty for these three different simulations. And they also give you experience to level up and everything. So you can do those and then go back to the training court and everything. But
I have to give that a shot. Okay.
Yeah, I've been playing. I've got like 15 hours in that, just playing it for that zine issue. I mean, usually I play enough to like refresh myself and remind myself about what I already love about it. But then I was just playing it and I was like, no, I just love this game. Like, this is just the game I'm currently playing now. And so I've been doing a ton of Mario Tennis.
No, I can see that.
It's super good. Yeah, that RPG mode was just like next level for me. Like, I remember having that and... at the launch of the Game Boy Advance era. And so I played like Castlevania and Circle of the Moon and one other. Oh, I think I had Fire Pro Wrestling. And I may have had like one other like launch game for the Game Boy Advance. And they were great. Like, I loved them. I played them a lot. But I remember getting through them and then like, all right, cool. It's backwards compatible. Let's slap in this Mario Tennis and I'll just keep playing. So like my early years of my Game Boy Advance were like, or early months of the Game Boy Advance were primarily playing like a Game Boy Color game in it. And so people were like, why are you doing that? Like, why'd you buy it if you're just playing this old game? And I was like, well, the other stuff's fun. I mean, I played, enjoyed them. I'm just finished with those games. And now I'm just back on a game I enjoy.
That might have been why I never knew about that one. I think because I think Game Boy Advance through like, the first DS was like where I really wasn't playing a lot of handheld games. So, and then, yeah, I guess some of the late Game Boy Color, like by then, I don't know. I was just like, that's not what I was into.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah. That way I was talking about this, previously with, Aiden Moyer, it was an episode for the show or it was something, I don't know, but we were talking about it, but in that age and in that generation, like when the Game Boy Advance and DS were kind of like, you know, coming out, I was spending more time outside of home. You know, I was having a little bit of a social life. I was like, you know, with my now wife, you know, she's my girlfriend at the time. And, you know, we'd be out driving places or like out waiting for things. Or it was like, oh, cool. It made more sense for me to have this handheld, you know, to actually still play games. I was never going to not be involved with video games, but that was like what I could do while away from home and then come back home and jump into like the PS2 and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just portable games, you know. Once they started like leveling up their quality, it was just like a whole other world. Well, let's jump into just like an icebreaker then.
Okay.
Well, you go to you've gone to some arcades
in
your lifetime.
I love going to the arcade. Yeah.
What was the last arcade game that you played?
Oh well, great. This is a great opportunity to promote an episode of our show too that should be coming out soon, because the last arcade
brand synergy
the last arcade game I played was Robotron 2084, because we actually like last month went to a tournament that our friend put on like at our local arcade, and that wasn't part of it, but we're like, while we're there, let's play some Robotron, because we just did Robotron 64, and you know, we played a little bit, but we didn't get a lot of time. I'd played it before, but you know, refreshing, we didn't get a lot of time because we were trying to play the other games that were in the mix for the tournament, you know. And but then like a few weeks later, I was in Chicago by myself and I had some time to kill, so I went to an arcade there in the city and put in a couple bucks and got some tokens or quarters or whatever, and I was like, oh, I'm sure this amount will last me, and I just played like a dozen games or so of it, and yeah, it's a sick game. I love Robotron.
Yeah, I mean, like the omnidirectional shooting and everything, like this, it's a cool genre and everything. I don't think I ever really like appreciated that game, but you know, like something like Smash TV, I remember playing just because it was like a gorier version of it. But then ultimately, like Geometry Wars on like the Xbox 360 and stuff, like when that came out, that's when I was like, okay, you know, I'm into these like omnidirectional shooters. Like this is fun and this is addicting, and there's like a score chase to it and everything. And I mean, it does trace all the way back there to Robotron for sure, so that's cool.
I love that. Cool. I love that style of gameplay for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was, I had a younger cousin, and we'd have to kind of pass around and give everybody turns and everything. And he's a couple years younger than me. And so, I mean, there was three kids in this family, but I was hanging out with the one closer to my age. But then his, you know, the younger cousin, when he got his turn, he had a Robotron game for the PlayStation, I think. And I just remember wanting to play, like, you know, some Tekken or like some game that was like fun and like new and everything. And then like we had like watch him for like 45 minutes, like poorly playing through Robotron. And it was just like,
oh, that sounds
this is
miserable.
So boring. You're so bad at this. Like, what are you doing? Like, just give us the controller and let us play our games again. Like, I don't want to do this right now. Yeah, I think maybe I'm putting some bias on Robotron before I'm like being forced to watch it being played at a time I didn't want to be played.
That our episode would be a perfect like one to do a bizarro PlayStation episode of, because we combined Robotron 64 with Nagano Winter Olympics 98.
Mm.
And there was, yeah, PlayStation had before Robotron 64, they kind of ported it from Robotron X, it was called, for PS1.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. And there was, of course,
that's the one.
Winter Olympics on PlayStation, which had some different games and different countries as well. So that'd be mm-hmm. fun, like while we were recording it, and I was like, oh, there's these different versions. I would love to like go and play those sometime. So we should do that mm-hmm. sometime.
I will try and enjoy Robotron X. Yeah. See if I can do it for the first time. See if I can find joy in it. I bet I could as an adult, but
maybe. Yeah,
not when I was. There was other things going on. Also, is it Nagano or Nagano?
That was something I wasn't sure about. I was saying Nagano. Is it Nagano?
I just Googled how to pronounce it, and then Google is telling me how to pronounce it.
Okay, so because I
now
I
know. Okay,
I was never I think we watched some stuff that said it, so maybe I had it in the back of my brain. But my whole life, if I ever encountered it, I would say Nagano. But then, like right before we were going to record, McKenna was like, "Is it Nagano or Nagano?" And I was like, I was like, I think it's Nagano. Like, I think, cause I just thought about like my intuition my whole life was probably wrong on that. So I was like, yeah.
You said it on the last episode, cause I think you were talking about the next upcoming episode of your show. And when I heard you say it, I was like, wait, have I been saying it the wrong way my whole life? Cause I've only, I think, ever read it, you know, or I mean, I've seen it written down and stuff like that. I don't know that I've ever really heard it like pronounced or in conversation. So, like, I had that question actually. I never asked you earlier. And so it's just funny that it came up now.
The more you know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get into the main topic then. Mm-hmm. You had thrown interest out there in doing a couple questions with me, but this one for this episode, we're talking about, do you have a favorite secret, bonus, or unlockable gaming mode or character? So that's a big, you know, generalized thing. There's a lot of things that kind of slot in there and where we can take this conversation, but yeah, what stood out to you when you read that? Why did you want to answer this question?
So my answer is a little bit, it's slightly more, it's meta actually. Cause when I read the question, the immediate thing that came to my mind, which was something that I loved back in the day, was the unlockable system that they had in Super Smash Brothers Brawl. I don't know if you recall this, but like, you know, in Smash, they always have a bunch of unlockable characters and music and stuff like that. But in Brawl, like the way they presented it was like, you had like this big wall of like glass blocks. And when you'd like unlock something, it would like shatter open and show you like if it was a song, like a little CD, or it'd have like a little model of like the item or trophy or course you unlocked. And you could see, I believe you could like hover over the nearby blocks to see like what were some of the things you had to do to unlock that particular thing. You know, it'd be like beat this mode with every character, and you know, it'd be like a red block you could break. But then there were some that you couldn't, but you could also coincidentally unlock them. So it would like shatter open that block and create like a new area you could work from. And also they also gave you a couple of like hammers you could use. Like if there was one you're like, you know, I'm just never going to be able to do this. Like I think they gave you a couple hammers that would let you just break the glass block and unlock the thing. And I think you might have been able to like gain, I don't remember, you might have been able to gain some of them by doing things. But anyway, me and my friends at the time, like this is what I was doing instead of like mobile gaming, was just a lot of multiplayer with friends at this time. And we treated this mode, I mean, it became like its own game, you know, like I had one of my friends who was like really good at Melee. And so when Brawl came out, like he was, you know, ready for it. And yeah, we just played through this and we were like trying to do everything we could to like clear the whole wall and like use as little of the hammers as possible. And yeah, there was like some strategy to it and stuff. And we were trying not to look anything up, you know, because like at that time that's when like you could really start to do that online and just go to game FAQs or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. It was fun, and like we loved just unlocking everything, and you know, we'd get the tracks and we'd love to go in. They'd let you go into the various stages and they'd like have like the tracks that were available, and they let you like adjust on the slider like how often it comes up when the stage is selected. So yeah, we got really into that stuff. It was really fun.
And it would give you the hint of like what you had to do to unlock that trophy, right? I mean, that's what it was. I mean, is that how you guys like progressed? Like you saw you had to do that, or did you not even know how to unlock them?
Yeah, I think it would be like there would be ones adjacent. I believe the adjacent blocks to what you've already unlocked would have a hint. And then there might be some that were like further off, you know, that you couldn't see as well. And or you couldn't see until it was unlocked, but you might accidentally unlock that and it would create a new front in your battle to unlock everything.
Gotcha. And I found a picture of that now. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why I don't remember this. I mean, maybe I didn't play Brawl as much as I thought I did.
Yeah, you found you see like there's red.
Yeah.
Like ones. Yeah, I believe the red ones you could see the hint for. If I'm not mistaken,
And then there's like this one. I mean, this the one that is highlighted in this screenshot says, you know, clear subspace emissary, you know, but that's like the center, nearly center one and everything. But yeah, there's red blocks, blue blocks, ones they've already unlocked here in this. And yeah, you can use hammers to smash them. Yeah, I mean, so this really isn't an unlockable mode per se, but just the vehicle in which you unlocked the unlocks was yeah. entertaining to you.
Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, how it gamifies it and makes you like, you know, want to see that list, you know, kind of clear out and everything. Like, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of neat. That's an interesting way to kind of like, you know, frame and think about this, because that's not the main game. Like, you're going to actually play the game to do what needs to be done to unlock these things. But just the process of doing that is kind of a cool vessel to let you know that there are things to do, or that, you know, there is still more to do, and how do you figure that out, and how do you accomplish that and everything? It's cool.
Mm-hmm. And for me, it adds, because there's certain games like that where if it didn't have that, like, it would be a fun game to play, you know, once in a while, or like with friends, obviously, you know, maybe you do the subspace emissary mode, a couple of the classic modes or whatever it's called, but it's not going to keep me playing on my own necessarily. Like, that was kind of how I was with the Smash Ultimate, was like their sort of like added on mode that was meant to like kind of get you in there and unlock a bunch of stuff. It didn't grab me in the same way. And so I feel like there's a lot of games and genres that I wouldn't normally like be that into, that if they just had something like this, where it's like, give me like a goal, I don't know if I'd 100% it, but I would like try to go for, you know, some of the stuff I think I could unlock. Cause there's something so satisfying about it when you do it.
No, I think it scratches like that same itch. I mean, to me, it sounds like why I like trophies and achievements and stuff in games. Like, normally, like, you know, I could play a game until like I'm done, be entertained by it, and move on and be done. But like, if I'm playing a kind of a more modern game with like trophies and stuff on the PlayStation, I might look at that trophy list and see like, hey, are there any like quick trophies or trophies I might be close to before I do like say, you know, goodbye to this game forever. And then it's like, oh, well, there's a few more. And so it manages to like get me to keep playing games like longer, because there's these arbitrary, like, you know, do this and get this like literal nothing reward that does nothing for you, but it's still like that weird like little dopamine hit type of thing. And then I think it breaks the game up into like chunks where you can kind of like decide to call it when you want to call it. Like, I mean, not everybody's 100% completionist, but like, you know, for those who do want to maybe like, you know, hey, I'll get a little bit more out of this, I can at least gauge that there. So having the unlocks set up that way, like, you know, like, do I want to do a little bit more? Like, there, I can see there is more to do. Like, should I continue, or should I try and find what that next challenge is, you know, or am I going to move on from here? That's kind of a cool thing. I do like the way that is actually set up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it.
There was that NES World Championship game that came out, you know, not too long ago on the Switch, mm-hmm. you know, where it gave you like little bite-sized chunks of those games with like, you know, like scores and times to beat and everything. And like, you know, you could see if you like got like, you know, your top ranking and all that stuff on it really quick, it would end up being like, you know, tiled out there with all the games that you can scroll through and stuff. And those types of things also make me want to like keep going back. Like, you know, if oh, well, you know, these are all little bite-sized small chunks and challenges to do, but like if I can complete them and check them off, it's almost like this, you know, like logbook where like I can do that rather than being like one long game where you don't know how much or how rewarded you are for doing what you've done and everything. So
yeah,
it's interesting design choice.
I always thought that sort of game could be a good in for a lot of people too, into some of these older games and stuff, where it's like, yeah, maybe if they jump into a game of Metroid or The Legend of Zelda, they might be like a little like bewildered or something, not unsure of what to do or what's fun, you know. And I feel like those little challenge games like do kind of like give people some of the satisfaction of playing it, to where they, you know, you might develop like a familiarity or fondness, much like you could with like playing Smash and learning about the characters. But in this case, it's like playing parts of the game where like that might convince some people to like check out some of these retro games.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a bad idea to like, I don't say give it away for free, but like, you know, do things like that like even like if it's a micro version of it where it's a few highlights, like, but then on the back end allow people to digitally buy those full games, like, oh hey, you liked doing these challenges and you never played Kid Icarus before, like, oh cool, well now you can buy the full Kid Icarus, and now that you've built these skills by doing these challenges, maybe you can complete the game. Like,
yeah,
it could be like a good vessel for marketing. I'm now actually more excited about that idea. I really wish actually that was something, like, instead of like a demo for a game and all that stuff, like you can play like little like quick like micro challenges within it, yeah, to like get a hang for it.
That's
and
a then great,
oh
idea.
Cool, so I know what these mechanics are, I know what to expect, rad, like, you know, do a few of them, and like if it's enough to kind of scratch that itch, then boom, you can go buy the full game and kind of play it from there. Oh. That's an idea, free idea to steal.
That's I had the demo disc for the Zelda Collector's Edition disc had like a Wind Waker demos, and they kind of did that. It was like, oh, here's the first dungeon, here's like a Forsaken Fortress part, and here's like the part where you're like on Windfall Island talking to the NPCs, and it would let you play for a half hour, but it was like here's this part, maybe that's a bit longer, but you know, it was sort of like they carved out this special spot in the game and were like, here, just dig in with that.
Yeah, they probably had to do that though, because that game is so long and drawn out and boring that they had to find small, exciting points to do it. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, really, I love Wind Waker. Wind Waker is a fantastic Zelda game.
It is one of too drawn out, though. It really is. Yeah.
I mean,
intro,
you know what? I think I did. Yeah, the intro starts slow, but I think once it gets rolling, it's rolling. I think the thing that the real test is once you have to find all those Triforce shards and like you're back. Traveling to like so many like older areas to find those, like that last like fetch quest thing, you know, towards the end was that was a real test of patience for folks, you know, like but you know, I think it was a good pace and well-designed game. I mean, it had the visual charm, you know, isn't like lends it to being a little bit more like breezy, you know, and oh, you need the breeze to, you know, flow in your sails, so it all makes sense. It's all designed right.
Yeah, that's one I could definitely do. One of your questions is like, how would you improve, like, you know, one of your favorite games or something? I could do a whole thing for Wind Waker. I think it's not even one of my, I just love Zelda though, but it's a game that I want to love. Like I really want to love, but I'm just like, yeah, it's a good game. You know, we could totally do that, but I wanted to pick something that wasn't like Zelda or Nintendo 64 necessarily. You know, I wanted to give your listeners something new, you know what I mean?
But yeah, I mean, I don't think I have exclusive PlayStation listeners or anything, you know, but
yeah. No, I just mean something fresh, you know. If you've heard me on other stuff and you're like, oh great, Gooey's talking about Zelda again, you know, like
oh yeah. Surprise, surprise, this guy again. Cool. Well, we did the episode then. That's it. We answered the question. If you want to check out more from Gooey and what he's working on, check out the links below. Flashback 64 is this podcast, part of the Soundstone Network. And yeah, I mean, anything else you want to plug or promote or anything before we wrap then?
Flashback64.com. I got the domain for that now too. So just go there. Mm. It's our website.
Yeah, you're probably fighting off, you know, a lot of people, you know, to reclaim that.
Yeah, I'm now squatting on this name. No one can have it. Back off.
All right. Well, flashback64.com and the podcast. Check it out. Links and everything, like I said, below in the show notes. Thank you, Goo, for chatting. We will definitely have you on a future episode that we're about to record here in moments. Goodbye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.